Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And I always love the episodes where I get to focus on the amazing life section. Obviously, a lot of what we're talking about here, you've got to build something meaningful. You've got to build a business that works. It's so much easier to build an amazing life if you've got something humming on the business side. I think this is kind of a random anecdote, but the whole idea of a philosopher king, it's much easier to become a king first and then become a philosopher versus the other way around. So I err on the side of tactical things, or at least I try to on the podcast, but I love the episodes where you get to talk about the really rich, deep things that make an incredible life, because that's just as equally, if not more so, important. And this week, this is part six of my financial mastery series. We're talking about earn your freedom, choose your work. And to get us up to speed to this is kind of it's not something you hear a whole lot in the financial world, the investing, the entrepreneurship world. So let's do a quick recap on the series so far. First, commandment number one, your money, your responsibility. We stress the importance of really taking ownership over financial decisions. You can't outsource this to other people. Commandment two, master your financial reports. They are not the sexiest thing in the world unless you consider a very healthy, profitable, cash flow positive business is sexy, which I do. And in that case, you need to really understand your income statement, your balance sheet, and your cash flow statement and cash flow forecasting. Commandment number three, prioritize your profit levers. Everyone loves to try to grow that top line, grow the marketing side of the business. It's an easy, prescriptive thing to do. Probably not the best use of your time unless you've covered price testing, really streamlining your overhead and keeping yourself lean, and after tax outcomes optimizing there. Those are the three big profit levers. Commandment number four, borrow wisely. So many businesses and lives have been ruined by debt not being used well. Bill D'Alessandro joined me for that episode, made a great analogy. Debt is like fire. It can be used to cook a meal or it can be used to burn your house down. And it's really sad when the latter happens. So we talked about how to use that well and avoid mistakes. Commandment number five, invest outside of your business. Discuss just the deep importance of when you get to the right stage, taking money out of your business and diversifying in other areas. And so here we are. We've got to this point where you're building a business, it's working, you're pulling money out, you're investing in it. And we've got to commandment six or pillar six at this point where you've earned or you're in the process of earning your freedom. And then what does that mean for that? And when I say freedom, I mean you have investments that cover your lifestyle and your recurring expenses so that work becomes something you get to choose to do and to craft. I believe we're all built and designed to work, but it's so much more fun when you get to decide how you lean into that, how you structure that versus doing just whatever you can to get that next dollar. So today, that's what we're talking about. And this is such a fun discussion. You may be at a place, most people still working like this. This is an aspirational thing for a lot of people, and that's okay. I want to talk about how to think about that, why you should strive towards it, and how to know how you're getting closer. But there's also a good number of our membership in our community who's here, and not everything becomes easy when you hit that number. So we're going to talk about how to think about mindset change, what really financial freedom unlocks, and all that stuff. Anyway, that's a really long preamble. Let's get into it. So part one of thinking about how to work toward being financially free and using that as a way to shape intentionally the work that you do. Why is this important? And I think you may think, hey, this goes without saying, but there's a couple parts in here I think maybe are less obvious. I believe there's two, the way that people look at money, I think people look at money in one or two frameworks. They either look at money as a way to buy things, cars, houses, status, whatever it is. And the second type look at money as optionality, choices, freedom, control, independence. And not that you can't be in both. Of course, we're all in both. And I think, you know, if you gain more financial resources and you're still wearing just completely beat up shoes and you don't upgrade any parts of your life that give you joy, I think it's probably a mistake. So we all are on the scale. But I think I really want to be, and I want to hang out with people who look at money as type two, as optionality, as a way to be able to build a richer life and create impact in the world. Morgan Housel, who wrote, I talk about him all the time because his book, The Psychology of Money, is my all-time favorite finance book. He says, you know, he looked at it and he said, the best thing that money buys when he has studied people deeply and how they have spent money is that people who use money to buy control over your time are exponentially happier with that choice than if they use it to buy resources. And so, you know, this point where you get to having financial freedom, having enough assets, and again, I mentioned this at the top, but I define this as having enough investments and money and things working for you outside of your business that your expenses are covered. And so you don't, you know, your business becomes, it goes from a having to work to choosing and getting to work. You go from prioritizing financial security for you and your family, which is important, super important, to having a business that complements your life. It doesn't replace. It unlocks a complete attitude shift. I was looking at anecdotes in the Ecom Fuel community prepping for this. And things that came up were, one person mentioned a longtime member who could retire at like 44, but kept working. He's like, my attitude completely shifted in terms of whether I wanted to go. Just going to work felt different because I could choose to do it. The same person mentioned that a $20,000 moonshot product launch that they wanted to do felt less like jumping off a cliff and more like something they were excited to try out and see how it went. I think this is really important. You stop making decisions based out of fear and you start making them based out of fit and impact. This is the, you know, one of the huge premises behind what we talked about last week, investing outside of your business. The more you build up that cushion, the more that you are not solely dependent or largely dependent or mostly dependent upon your business, the better long-term decisions you're going to make, and you're going to make them out of, you know, opportunity and long-term results as opposed to fear and short-term thinking. You can walk away from bad deals, bad clients, bad opportunities, bad employees. These are all wonderful things that come when you hit this milestone. But there's one more that I didn't fully appreciate until it happened to me. I want to be just a little raw with you, tell you a story from the last few years of my life. A handful of years ago in our community, there was an issue that popped up that I tried to proactively get out in front of and address. And I thought I was doing something productive to help a problem. And this issue that I brought up and tried to solve kind of snowballed, didn't snowball, it really snowballed into a really major issue in our community where a magnifying glass was put on something. And I'm not going to get into the specifics because I really, those aren't, A, they're not important. B, I don't want to get into all the messy details. They're not critical to the point of the story. But what happened was it turned into a full-fledged community discussion on something that was critical of myself in the community and the leadership of the community, where there were some points that were validly raised, things that we could have done better. And I tried to take those seriously. And there were some points that I thought were deeply unfair and did not give us the benefit of the doubt. And those really hurt. And I wanted deeply to be able to be very candid about my opinions about those things that I thought were unfair and painting us in a really unfair perspective. And I was not in a place then where I was financially rock solid. And I wish this was not the case. I wish I had been braver at the moment, at least in terms of expressing how I felt. But because I was worried about the community and my business and protecting that future, I didn't fully say what I thought was true. And I took a punch in the gut in some instances to protect that business because I didn't want to blow things up financially. And that emotional weight was heavy. There was one moment where it just had been building for 2 or 3 days and it was all consuming in my mind. And I just broke down crying for like 90 seconds. And I'm not a crier. I'm not one of those really emotional people. My wife found out about this like 2 years after the fact and she was shocked. It was really, really hard. We got through that. And it was actually a wonderful thing because for a number of reasons. One, for the things that were valid, it gave me a little bit more of an appreciation for things that I need to have deeper consideration about. It showed me the true thoughts and perspectives of some of our members and the ways that some people that I thought maybe, you know, gave us the benefit of the doubt and who didn't. And that was helpful to know. But it also showed me that hard things happen and our business and myself is more resilient than I would expect it. I don't think we had a single person leave that I can tell from that incident and from that whole episode. But what really was hammered home to me is, you know, a handful of years later now, in a position where financially I get to choose to work, which is a wonderful, it's an incredible thing, it's a blessing. And knowing now that if that incident happened again, and I'll probably have, I mean, business is hard. I work with lots of people. I make mistakes. I am by no means perfect. Something like this is going to happen again. And knowing that I have the ability to be able to speak freely and not have to worry about potentially the financial implications of that is a wonderfully freeing thing. I wish I had had the courage and the ability to do that back then. I did not. And there's this amazing quote or concept that Scott Galloway, he's often known as Prof G, mentions. He says, if you have a degree of financial security, it is incumbent upon you to speak your mind freely in things you deeply believe in and are convicted about. And I love that concept because, and he makes this point, most people are not in that position. And I was not in that position and I could not speak freely. It's a really hard position to be in. So I think that's one of the things that people don't think about. I never thought about, but even aside from all the other things that frees you up to do, the ability to speak freely without fear within your business, on behalf of your business, is a pretty wonderful, freeing, and empowering and powerful thing to create change in the world that you want to see. And also, you know, not just break down and cry too. That's a nice little side benefit as well. Anyway, enough about stories from Andrew's diary here. That's why this is important. That's why I think it matters. Just wanted to tee that up before we get into, you know, move on. So part two, how do you actually know when you're in a financial position where you can start making decisions differently in your life and your business? So a pretty simple formula: track your investable assets. And these are things you have invested. Your house does not count. Your house is consumption, in my opinion. That sweet new truck that you bought, no, you don't get to count that. That's consumption. And we're talking about things that you have that are liquid assets or just, you know, investments that you have a reasonable degree of confidence are going to pay off. So you're track that those assets. Assume a decent return. You know, we're probably going to use, you know, 7 to 10%. And then look at your burn, how much you're spending on a regular basis, and compare those two numbers on a quasi-regular basis. So for me, I had this spreadsheet that I tracked for years, and it had two lines on it. Probably once every, you know, 3 or 4 months, I would go and I would compute all, you know, I'd do a quick tally of my spending from the last month. You can do this if you're an Excel junkie on, you know, dump in your spreadsheets from your bank account into Claude, or you can do it on a spreadsheet if you're old school like me. Lots of ways to do this, but you get a sense of what you're spending over the last year. And then you put that as a dot and create a chart. And then you have, let's call it for now, you know, 4.5% of your invested assets, which is a rough safe withdrawal rate. We'll talk about how to think about that in a minute. And I watched these two lines kind of get closer sometimes, and then some months they'd get further apart if, you know, we spent a bunch of money or something happened. And I had this picture of Braveheart that I put on top of the spreadsheet, like Braveheart with like the war paint and, you know, the scene where he's going, freedom! Like that was, for me, it was a fun emotional little play to drive that home. And then one day, these lines finally crossed. The investment income came up, to hit the spending line. And honestly, it's a little anticlimactic. Felt really good. I think I chatted with Andy, my wife, about it. Life did not change in a massive way apart from that. You know, in that evening, it was a nice thing, but there were no fireworks, there were no parades. The real changes came gradually over time. But it's a cool thing to do. And it's a really important thing to track, because if you don't know, seeing that progress is so helpful for making the decisions, even if the end is a little anticlimactic. It takes a while to manifest. But that's roughly how I did it. How much should you use as that safe withdrawal rate? A lot of people use the 4% rule. And this was based on, I think, something called the Trinity Study back in 1998, designed for roughly a 30-year retirement horizon. And I'm not a big fan of this 4% rule. Again, I feel like I'm saying this ad nauseum in the series. I'm not a financial advisor. Do your own homework here. This is how I think about it. Make sure you do your own diligence. But I really don't like the 4% rule, and here's why. The 4% rule is about the most conservative application of a safe withdrawal rate of your investment portfolio that there is. It assumes you will not make any more money in your life. It assumes that you are not going to get Social Security. And that actually might be a decent assumption, depending on how old you are. Thinking that one's, I'm kind of early 30s or 40s. Yeah, I'm not. I'll be lucky if I see some of that. It assumes that you have no flexibility in your spending. That if the market tanks, you know, really tanks, you're not willing to, you know, spend a little bit less as your portfolio goes down. It also assumes that you're going to spend just as much money in your later years as you will when you're younger. Which almost certainly, pretty good data that, you know, as you age, you spend significantly less money. So, you know, I'm just looking at some rough numbers, and these vary based on how I calculate it. But, you know, if you have a 4.5% withdrawal rate, your success rate on a 30-year horizon, if you are flexible with your spending, is like 95%. And it can be even as high as 90% with a 5% withdrawal ratio if you have flexibility in your spending if the market dips. So my point is, There's so much value that comes from the mindset shift of thinking about running a business and living a life based out of optionality as opposed to a scarcity mindset and fear, that I don't think you need to have a 95, 98% confidence interval to do this. And even we're adaptable people, we're entrepreneurs. If something happens, we can go back to work. You know, you can sell that nice truck we talked about, whatever it is. Anyway, so just a little bit of a pitch for a little bit. And if going from a 4% withdrawal rate to a 4.5% withdrawal rate saves you 4 or 5 years of your life, that's a, you know, would you trade 4 or 5 years of your life for a 5 or 10% increase in likelihood, you know, from going from like a 90 to 95% confidence that you're going to have enough money to, you know, without having to make any changes in your life? I wouldn't. I think that's a bad trade. A little bit of a diatribe there. If I was going to pick one, I like the 4.5%. I think that's a nice straddle between the tried and true, super conservative 4 and the maybe more liberal 5%. Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Andy from HelloBatch.com, where they sell super high-end CBD products and partner with a local farm out of Wisconsin. Really great, fun, friendly guy. Was hanging out with him recently at an awesome event. And here's what Andy had to say about his experience with E-commerce Fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure store owners.
I think the coolest thing about ECF for me has been that the ways in which it's helpful has evolved. When I first joined, the most help and use I got was simply scrolling through the forums, reading about questions that I had that other people have already faced, and kind of just absorbing knowledge in the forum. As I've aged as a member, I'd say going to the events and building relationships with other community members in person has been the most valuable thing. I've actually ended up working with a few of them, and it's just such a great way to be like a filtering mechanism for awesome people to work with. For it to work in that way, you have to like go to these events, build the relationships, meet the people, but everyone is so great. I mean, it's just the best sense of camaraderie ever. And I can truly say that I think I've made some lifelong friends in ECF just being here a year and a half. So thank you, Andrew.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. Next big question is, how do I know, you know, how much is enough from a number perspective? And we just talked about, yes, you can track your spending. But going back to that Psychology of Money book again, it was either in that book or somewhere else, but Housel refers to this study where he asked people how much they need to be happy. How much is enough? And inevitably, whether you were a janitor making, you know, who had a net worth of $4,000 in your checking account, or if you were a billionaire, almost every single time the answer for how much is enough was 2x what you have right now. And he calls this the moving goalposts phenomenon, that the hardest part of personal finance, the hardest part of getting to a point where you feel financially secure and operate in that way is not moving those goalposts. And I have seen this in my own life as well. Like I remember a time I'd have conversations with my brother and even Andy and I, we, you know, we're kind of future planning and we wrote down like, here's where we want to be. You know, if we had this X amount, this would be where we'd be. We would just make decisions completely differently. And over the years, that changed. And I've got to the point where I've been able to mostly arrest those moving goalposts, but it is an incredibly difficult thing to do. It's very easy to want to move up your lifestyle with your income earning. Anyway, that's just something to think about. And the framework that I like is give yourself one double. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is when you're starting out early and you set that, here's how much we think is enough, let yourself double that once and then stop. Because it gives a little bit of flexibility to, hey, living a little bit bigger, maybe thinking, dreaming a little bit bigger from a financial resources perspective, making more impact, but it doesn't give you just a blank check to keep deferring your life because you don't have the ability to have some self-control. So I like the idea of give yourself one double and then stop. All right. So you've got to the point you've invested, you've been tracking your lines with your geeky little Braveheart spreadsheet or whatever you want to do. You figured, okay, we're at a place we can breathe a little bit. We can breathe really well. We're financially free here. This is amazing. What next? Well, the ideal outcome, I believe, if you're listening, is that most entrepreneurs, and you almost certainly are one, your ideal outcome is not sitting on a beach, drinking pina coladas, and, you know, working on the tan. I think one of the ironies of entrepreneurship and of retirement is that the people that are able to retire early or have the optionality to work early or in their life are often, if not always, the people that are least suited to be able to do that and enjoy it. I think the best path is if you can own a business, I think the best path is to own a business that you enjoy running 75% of the time on your own terms for a 10 to 20 year horizon. And the reasons are, I think, you know, this is going to be, your business is going to be one of the best investment most likely you ever make from an ROI perspective. You're going to be hard pressed to find a place to be able to compound and generate cash better than a well-run business that you know. If you have a business, you have ongoing cash flow that comes in. And if you look at humans are funny from a psychological perspective. I think most psychologists would agree with me. I can't quote a study on this, but that if you take someone who is worth, let's say, you know, $3 million and their net worth is growing consistently every single year and they have cash coming in the door, they are going to be emotionally more content and satisfied than someone who is worth, you know, maybe three, four, five times that, $15 million. But their money, they don't have any cash flow coming in and they're having to figure out how to manage this lump sum. There's a psychological difficulty that comes when you have a lump sum and you have to put that to work. It's a different skill set. It's a different mentality than a cash flow business. Another reason I think having a business for the long run, even if you have the option to work, is that your network compounds, your relationships deepen over decades, your skills deepen over decades. And those all pay off in the long game. Purpose and growth. Like, we've all heard the stories of people retiring and they lose that sense of you know, something to pour themselves into to work. Also, you lose friends. Like, I've seen people in the e-commerce world leave and they, you know, told me very, very frankly, I miss the network. We have some of our wonderful longtime community members who have sold their business in e-com. We call them ECF alumni, and they come back to ECF Live largely because they want to see people they care about. And they still have a lot of wisdom and knowledge to share, not in the trenches, but they come back because they miss that, you know, the people component of it. And then finally, I think why it makes sense to have a business in the long term, even if you don't have to, is that if you have the optionality, you can design a business that you enjoy running most of the time. You're more likely to stick with it if you don't hate it. And I don't know about other entrepreneurs. I very much, especially for the first, you know, for most of my entrepreneurial career, had kind of a mercenary attitude, like started selling CB radios and trolling motors. I try not to dig those old businesses up too much because they were a long time ago. And I don't want to be the, you know, the guy selling stories back from high school that is still wearing his Letterman's jacket, you know, when he's 45 years old. It's a bad look. But I bring that up because zero passion there. I was completely focused on the economics. But if you're able to not worry as much about the economics, I actually think having a deep passion, an authentic passion, as overused as that word is, for business in a world of AI, in a world where it's harder to connect with people, is actually a huge asset these days. So how does this actually manifest itself? If you buy the premise, you should keep a business, you should redesign it. What does that look like in terms of change? You know, so for me, when I hit that, when those, you know, the two lines crossed on the Braveheart spreadsheet, I stopped doing some things in the business, even though they generated money. I stopped doing podcast ads. If you listen to the show for a while, you'll remember podcast ads back in the day. I stopped doing them partly because I disagreed with, you know, we had great hosts, but I wanted to have more of a high signal, low noise channel to talk to people. I wanted to build up as much credibility as possible. It was also kind of a pain doing the contracts. They were super profitable, but I just didn't like doing them. And I thought they diluted the content. So I stopped doing them. It was a terrible financial decision, but I wasn't having to make that decision purely out of finances anymore. Not maximizing sponsors at the events. So we definitely have, at our events, we have sponsors. And we could pack in a lot more sponsors, but we don't. We're pretty careful about making sure we pick sponsors that we like, that we agree with. We've turned down sponsors before because one of our things is at our events, we want to have a really high attendee to sponsor ratio. So that's something that we're, you know, we don't do. We don't pack sponsors in. Things I started doing, you know, especially recently, I've started working 30 hours a week as opposed to 40 hours a week, trying to be really focused and intentional, but a little more time in the mornings for workouts with family. Fridays, I try to take mostly off, reinvesting in low ROI but fun projects. I think I mentioned this in the past. We did an ECF Live kind of movie trailer that was kind of expensive. It was a ton of fun, and it's probably not something I would have done in a pure economics environment, but I got to do it because it was a blast. Same thing with our rebrand. We hired someone that was probably on the upper end of what we needed for our recent rebrand about a year ago. Very happy with how it came out. Had a lot of fun. Financially, it was probably not the absolute best move, but it was something that was fun to do, and we had the, you know, could do it. And there's a lot of other things that, you know, in terms of the last pillar of this series, pillar number 8 is pass it on. And we're going to talk more about making a bigger impact through giving, more time for family, other projects. So put a pin in that. We'll get back to that. But those are some of the things that can change. I think one thing that's important to say as well, though, is that once you reach a point like this and you're thinking about how do I design a business and work that matters and that lights me up out of because I can, not because I have to, is that some things are don't just leave. And we're going to talk about this a bit more next week in terms of change your habits. But personally for me is it's really hard to stop working for work's sake when you've done this for 20 plus years, right? I feel productive working. I feel guilty when I'm not working. That is hardwired into me and it's something I'm trying to work on. And even knowing I don't necessarily need to do it, it's a very difficult habit to break and a mindset to break. Turning my brain off. I still have a hard time not thinking about business. I wish my daughter didn't say this, but sometimes she'll say to me, "Hey Dad, how's space?" And what she means is you're over in the corner totally spacing out, or we're having a great dinner time conversation and Dad is off on Pluto somewhere. I still do this and it's hard and I wish I didn't, but it's not something that just turns off. It's still hard to give yourself permission to leave money on the table. It gets easier, but old instincts die hard. And another thing that's tough is it's hard to not shift back into grind mode when you need to, or to look at something and say, there's no way I'm going to pay. Sometimes it's easy. Like I mentioned a couple other projects earlier. But right now we're, you know, when am I investing a lot in content for this year? And I've been doing a lot of it myself, grinding. I've had a lot of help from our team, but also doing a lot myself. And I really need to hire some people to help me streamline that process. And it's a little difficult for me because the old me says, hey, this is something we can do in-house. We can build the system. Yes, it may take 3 or 4 or 5 months. And yes, maybe you've got to, you know, it'll be a little slower. When what I really need to be saying is this is a big impact thing. Let's hire a little faster. Let's move a little faster. And let's spend a little extra money for the impact. Anyway, kind of ranting at this point. But things, your mindset shift is the hardest thing, I think, to change in this. So again, we're going to talk about those a little bit more next week. A few questions. If you're at a point where these are fun questions to think about if you are working toward the point of having optionality and really being able to design a business around what works for you well. Or if you're there too, these are great questions to think about. Have I done this yet? So a few. Am I optimizing for wealth building or for energy, satisfaction, and impact? What kind of schedule do I actually want to keep? You know, how do you want your days to look and how do you want your weeks to look in terms of when you're at work, when you're with family? Another great question is the business that I own now a business that I can run happily for a decade? I'm a big proponent of trying to have a business that you can run for a long time. That may not be the business that you own. Some businesses you can tweak and change things and be really generally pretty happy and they're a good fit. Others, they may be a terrible fit, especially if you were on the mercenary side. And you may need to sell that and start something new or sell it and maybe pivot into a completely different business line. What parts of the business do you love doing and which parts do you absolutely hate that you could eliminate, delegate, or redesign? And then this one I think is really interesting. Inertia is such a powerful thing. Sometimes it's hard to think about how you change your business without it having kind of more of a blank slate. If you were starting from scratch, would you design your business to work the way it is? And I think a helpful framework is if you didn't have to go through the pain and difficulty and hard conversations to make the changes in your business, if you just wave a magic wand and have them be there, would you do that? Is it the pain and the friction of change that is preventing you from doing something? If that's the case, I usually find 9 times out of 10 going through that pain is worth it. So thinking from if I start from scratch, how would I design this is a helpful thing. So a whole lot in there. That was a whole lot of things. But in general, this is kind of what you're working toward, at least the first step of what you're working toward in this entire entrepreneurial journey, getting to the point where you have optionality. You can work on things that really light you up, that make an impact in the world, that do good, and that you get excited about. So Hope this is helpful. Next week, we're going to be talking about evolving your habits. I touched on a few this week. Habits are so hard. And I'll say this at the beginning of next week's episode. And again, going back to Morgan Housel, who probably, you know, deserves, if we had podcast ads here, he'd probably be getting 50% of the revenue based on all the, you know, what I'm pretty much just ripping off and plagiarizing from him. But sorry, Morgan, no podcast ads. We axed those. The way you think about money, or the way people think about money, has very little to do with how much they have. And it has almost everything to do with how they were raised and their habits growing up. And that's what we're going to be talking about next week, because it's sometimes those habits serve you really well and often they don't. But we'll dive into that next week. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.